right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, July 20th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here at UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a balmy 76 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. And I see by the radar, looks like we have a thunderstorm headed this way. So where do we leave off last time? Sorry about this, guys. It's been kind of tough to get back to the pace I was at before, but we left off on the 14th, which would be a week ago today. We titled the show Tech Titans, Deep Learning, Teaching AI Like Kids, and Learning Cars. And we had ended up the show looking at Elon Musk and his Tesla self-driving car company. He had just hired a very well-known AI guru who had been working on some of the self-learning technology to be able to have AI teach itself like a child and develop views as to what is the correct response, like a human would, when faced with certain situations. We discovered that Google's AI engineers had created an AI that could create its own AI. And it's starting to get concerning to me. Elon Musk just came out at some governor's conference. I think it was the beginning of this week. And it talked about the dangers again of not having rules in place to set laws like Isaac Asimov did to protect humans from artificial intelligence gone awry. And along with a lot of this, we've been discovering that the whole brain initiative that Obama inked back a few years ago, I believe it was 2012, we covered that. Search Before the First Cup Space Brain or Brain Initiative or something like that. And you'll probably find 20 shows where we covered the brain or even neurology or something like that. Or AI. It's pretty amazing that they have been working on reverse engineering the human brain, and of course using all of these disorders, the pandemic of Alzheimer's-like dementias that has been spreading like wildfire across the world, bringing the dead, the brain dead, back to life. We'd read about that experiment. They were going to bring brain dead patients from the United States to India and then use a couple of different technologies. One would be those iPS pluripotent stem cells that they create from the donor's skin, mix them up with a few chemicals, and get them to create whatever type of bodily organ stem cell they need to then potentially transplant. Now, I just saw a story. They had said originally that transplantation had a very low incidence. Transplantation of a donor stem cell had a very low incidence of rejection. I just read a new study the other day about how now they're still having issues with bodily rejection of some of these new iPS stem cells. So not a completely baked technology yet, but I've said before, this is the one that I'd put my money on if I were a betting girl, like riding a pony. I would say that the iPS stem cell therapy would be one of the most promising and least scary out of a lot of the stuff that we've talked about. But these stem cells can be used not only to cure what ails you, so they're saying, but also to create little mini brain balls. Remember, we've covered those a few times. And the second time we covered little mini brain balls, they were these mutant little mini brain balls that they had let grow, and I honestly don't remember, maybe a year or more, in a petri dish. And they were saying that the only thing that these were lacking, because they were thinking little mini brains, were sensory inputs such as googly, robot googly eyes, sensory organs, whether it be vision, hearing, taste, smell, tactile sensations. These little brains were able to function. So we have people like Elon Musk and organizations such as DARPA. They're looking at brain-computer interfaces. We spent a day or two over the last spate of shows, I believe, looking at brain-computer interfaces. It was one of those shows that had that in the title. But they're looking at merging biology with the machine. Now, anyone who has followed what's been going on over the last 5-6 years or so with technology, it's become pretty evident that they are planning, are merging biology with technology. Of course, human 2.0, H+, we looked at that also over the course of this show to upgrade us to be like, what's his name? $6 million man, Steve Austin. But even better, because this was just bionic parts. This is, and I think he might have had one of those super zoomy camera eyes. And now they even have them with like X-ray or infrared vision. I think Sony looked at that too. There were a couple competing, maybe even Google's Verily, with the contact lens to diagnose and treat diabetes. But Sony had this super HD camera eye that could take pictures with a blink. And this is even like a scarier step forward from Google Glass. And remember, one of the things that we looked at was how the eye has a direct connect via that optic nerve to the brain. So be careful what you put in your eye. One little bloop of light from one of those newfangled contact lenses, just in the right pulse frequency. Boop, 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 boop. And who knows? I'm telling you, optogenetics has come a long way. We've seen some crazy stuff just lately. There have been a few stories that caught my attention. If anyone has access to Twitter, at least to see headlines, even if you're not synced up to Facebook, go out to twitter.com/JewelEStan1, I believe it is. Let's see. twitter.com/JewelEStan1. That is my Twitter handle, and that should be feeding all my stories, at least my most recent stories, out. So we're going to cover some of these today if you want to follow along. All right, so one of the first stories we're going to hit today caught my attention, because I do get my Google feed daily. And if anyone wants a part of that feed, just go to google.com/alerts. You have to have one of your Google accounts logged in and an email address, but you just put in your email address. I don't think it has to be a Google one. Just put in an email address and a search term that you want to get a digest of any new postings that hit the internet within the last 24 hours for any topic whatsoever. And you will get a digest once, twice, three times daily, depending on how much news is out there. And artificial intelligence, as well as AI, seem to be the busiest, because I get probably 10, 12 email digests a day with new stories that go up. So one of the stories that I received the other day was out of inews.co.uk under their technology section. This is the Essential Tech Daily Briefing. By 2020, every single product and service will have artificial intelligence. Whoa, let's get excited. And see, this is the newest snake oil. And I posted a story the other day about the summer of AI love. And it was from a guy that seemed to have at least my number of years of experience in the tech industry from the inside, watching it sprout and grow from old school type command line interface and the old 80s video games, Galactia, Galactica, Asteroids, Space Invaders. That was one of my favorite, but it made me nervous and they were totally playing a psyop, because as the music would get faster and the things would zoom down the screen and get closer and closer to squishing you, that gave you a pure stimulation response of fear. And it got the heart pumping, got your adrenaline going. And I remember that feeling, and I didn't like it when I was a kid. I was like, it made me nervous. But I'm telling you, those games, those original games, if you remember the old arcades, kids would go in there. I was just watching with Munchkin old school war games, 1983, and it really was some flashback history there. It was fun to watch it with a kid who had no idea what a modem was or what command line interface was. So I had to explain it to her and kind of explain the history of things. But it was very cool to see. But now, doing the full spectrum look back on the last 40 years. That's really kind of a window into how we're getting old, because it's sad. Here I'm faced with like all these debilitations now that I didn't have before, or maybe I did have and just ignored them. But this is a scary time. You know, as you're getting older, we always laughed at old people. Even in war games, the girl, the lead, whatever her name was, made some comment about, oh, 40 being old. Yeah, how about 50? Or 70 or 80. But as transhumanism and this merger of man and machine is kind of moving forward, one of the things that we've discovered that a lot of these tech billionaires have been investing into with this technology is longevity medicine. Being able to live forever, maybe even upload yourself to the machine. Ooh, wait, that reminds me. I found a story that I posted on my own personal page. Well, I'm going to go there, about how if you really exist after your corporeal body is gone, will you really be you? Why the you in the afterlife wouldn't really be you? And I had to laugh at this because this just kind of sums it all up. Oh, wait. Well, we'll get back to the original story that we started. Why by 2020, which is just a short 3 years from now, every single product and service will have artificial intelligence. Almost every single new device and service will contain AI by 2020 as tech firms rush to fulfill demand for smarter products. The popularity of AI-powered devices like the Amazon Echo, and I saw Amazon was now releasing that in a smartphone app as well. So if you don't get that little nasty R2-D2, it's going to be watching you 24/7. Well, then you just put it on your already comfortable surveillance device that you carry around day and night. Or the Google Home has kickstarted a renewed interest in the technology, which is now regarded as the next big gold rush, according to analysts from Gartner. We've talked about Gartner before. They are the word and what is coming, and where big firms invest their R&D. AI is set to revolutionize the future workplace. In the face of the economy, as human jobs will be aided, and sometimes entirely replaced by increasingly intelligent machines. We've talked about that as well. The robots are coming to take your job, and we are going to be relegated to obsolete humans. Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple are among the tech giants sinking vast sums of money into developing their own branches of the technology, both for use in consumer products and industry-wide applications, with more than 1,000 companies describing themselves as AI vendors, the firm found, and that would be Gartner. The hype around AI has led to AI washing, with companies tending to over-exaggerate their smart credentials, because it is a very new technology that they don't quite know how it works. With hype around AI, they've exaggerated their smart credentials in an effort to curry consumer favor. It adds, AI offers exciting possibilities, but unfortunately, most vendors are focused on the goal of simply building and marketing an AI-based product rather than first identifying the user's needs. And that is what a good consultant does. When I was an engineer, that was my job, was to go in with the sales rep, meet with the customer, regardless of what vertical industry it was in. We did all of them, 5 or 6 different ones, and understand what their pain points were. Anyone who's ever done engineering, you know that, or at least sales engineering, is pain points. Identify those pain points, and then you build a proposal using whatever snake oil you're selling that will alleviate their pain points. And then if you were smart, you'd find a way to get creative financing so you could break it out over, 1 year, 5-year, 10-year payout, and even come up with a leasing number. That was one thing that I found toward the end of my days in engineering. If you could break it out a couple different ways or do like a phased implementation, so you give them something, you know, they might end up paying a little bit more on the front end, but it was upgradable and expandable. And then you broke out the options so they could buy them next year, and you made that part two of the project. You know, a phased implementation is always the best. So I am going to guess that as these rollouts with the implementation of artificial intelligence happening across the board by 2020, whether it be in application technology on our devices or for human upgrades, remember Boiling Frog. When things happen slowly, people don't tend to notice. And if you do it as a phased implementation, $29.95 a month, software as a service, you know, it's not going to be as painful. People don't notice it as much. And then it just kind of happens. And then everyone comes to depend upon it as they have manipulated those brain chemicals. Bzz, 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 bzz. They push those buttons. That dopamine button, we've looked extensively at dopamine as well in our devices and our addictions. And remember, DARPA was even working on manipulating oxytocin, that love chemical, to be able to get you to like them. And as they are moving this forward, our devices are getting smarter, and we are going to be interacting with our devices as if they were a living, breathing entity. Tell your secrets to the machine. Good old Dr. Watson will cure you. Get on the couch. We read a story a week or two ago about the guy who did the virtual psychiatrist on his virtual couch. And it started asking him disturbing questions after it asked him a question about his mother. And then he smirked, remembering something that happened to him in his childhood and that they used to joke about in regards to Freud and psychology in general, and always asking about your mother. So after he smirked, the AI psychiatrist started asking really disturbing questions from a Freudian stance that took it down in a very uncomfortable path for the user of the technology. But remember, a large part of this 21st Century Cures Act had to do with the brain. All of us having small amounts of mental illness. And, you know, I saw a story on that a few weeks ago, and I don't think I ever posted it. But they have said exactly what we had guessed they would say, that we have mental illness on a spectrum, and they will be able to diagnose us. We found out just by the sound of our voices. We are something talking about the Brain Project and delving into bringing back brains from the dead. This one really shocked me, having just spent almost a few weeks in a facility with them poking around and looking at my brain. Scientists have reversed brain damage in a 2-year-old girl who drowned in a swimming pool. This is from ScienceAlert.com from July 19th. So this would be yesterday. She was in the water for 15 minutes. Researchers in the U.S. have reported what they believe is a first-of-its-kind reversal of brain damage after treating a drowned and resuscitated toddler with a combination of oxygen therapies. The little girl, whose heart did not beat on its own for 2 hours after drowning, holy shit, showed deep gray matter injury and cerebral atrophy with gray and white matter loss after the incident and could no longer speak, walk, or respond to voices, but would uncontrollably squirm around and shake her head. Now, this is pretty frightening. When we were looking at those mini brain ball injections to bring back the brain dead after traumatic brain injury, we found out they were also looking at transcranial stimulation, which is a technology that DARPA has been spending a lot of time looking at bzz, 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 zapping the brain back to life like a Frankenstein movie. That's what it reminds me of. Well, oxygen is also very important to the brain and to the life of our gray matter. We discovered in my unfortunate incident that I had low oxygen levels, which is pretty much all the time. I'm sure the smoking didn't help. We're sitting in this office. But oxygen levels are very important, not only to your brain function, but also to your blood function and whether or not you have clots. Oxygen transmission is something that has to happen to every cell in your body. So anyway, amazingly, thanks to a course of oxygen treatments, and this would include hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which I'm assuming would be in one of those chambers, administered by a team from LSU Health New Orleans, the University of North Dakota as well, the doctors were able to significantly reverse the brain damage experienced by the toddler. The startling regrowth of tissue in this case occurred because we were able to intervene early in a growing child. And remember, children have a lot of stem cells that adults do not. We looked at that young versus old blood technology called, hold on, I'll pull it out of a hat here somewhere. What was it called? Cupidol for chat. Who remembers? Oh, I don't want to cheat. What the hell is it called? Ventnor had invested in it. New blood versus young blood. It was some sort of biosis. Come on, chat. You got 30 seconds. Delay. Young versus old blood. Symbiosis, no. Parabiosis is what it is. And it still doesn't come up, but it's parabiosis. They took the blood vessels of an old mouse or rat, connected them to the blood vessels of the opposite, so young to old to young. And they discovered that the mouse was able to rejuvenate itself with young blood because of some substance that is in it. I don't know if they were able to identify that substance by that point or not. But believe you me, they're going to. They have clinics right now that's accepting money. I don't know. They're probably offering $500 in college newspapers for kids to go donate their blood to pay for their next semester tuition. But here is an interesting story that I mentioned earlier. It's out of Scientific American, interestingly. Why the U in an afterlife wouldn't really be you. And this kind of made me think of Kurzweil and his whole dream to upload himself to the machine someday and be eternal, to live in your digital, what would you call it, purgatory, where you would never be allowed to be let go into the ether sphere. You'd be trapped forever and their slave to be able to reproduce without lossiness. Reproduce digitally over and over again, like in Battlestar Galactica, the 2004 version, I believe, where they kept reproducing. They would come back, and they'd have whatever intelligence they had garnered, kind of like that self-learning Baxter. Remember Baxter robot? 24 hours on an assembly line. Baxter would know, and actually we found out now, he doesn't even have to be in an assembly line. They're teaching these artificially intelligent industrial robots to learn via virtual reality. They program in a scenario, and the AI will go through this scenario bloop, 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 over and over again in virtual reality in its googly brain. And as it's going through trial and error, through playing a game, mind you, which is what we found out watching War Games from 1983. That's how they programmed Joshua. Joshua learned to play games, and every time Joshua would lose, Joshua would come up with a new strategy to win. And the ultimate goal of whatever game Joshua was playing was to win the game. Do you want to play a game? It was great, though, in showing a kid that really didn't live through the Russian "we're going to get nuke" scare of the 80s with Reagan. I think it was definitely a shocker for her to kind of see that and go, oh, and I had to explain, you know, they used to take us out into the hall and do air raid drills, tell us to put our faces against the ceramic wall, because it might save us in a nuclear explosion. And then they took us downstairs to show us the quote-unquote fallout shelter with 50-gallon drums of water and shelves of ready-to-eat meals. I mean, I had no idea. It was probably 1980, maybe 1980, maybe even before that, 1979. I was in elementary school. But watching that movie definitely took me back. And it was interesting to note that one of the main premises at the beginning of that film was convincing the high-end generals that they needed to take the human component out of turning the key based upon what they were seeing on the screen. And in the very end, it ended up that they didn't initially launch a nuclear attack against Russia because some guy, some cog in the wheel, refused to do it. And he wouldn't turn that key because he wasn't willing to use his conscience. This is kind of like that Milgram's experiment. He wasn't willing to put his conscience on the line for killing 20 million people just because a machine was telling him to do so. And now talk about the parallels to that time. We have Future of Life Institute and all these other organizations and smarty pants out there who are signing petitions saying autonomous killing machines are wrong. And this is where we're faced right now. You know, nuclear explosion, schmooklier explosion. Nukes are so yesterday compared to the insanity that we have right now. Autonomous technology, AI, and all these different crazy things, even down to the biological CRISPR level. We have AI developing different technologies, biological technologies, viruses, bacteria, parasites, by mixing and matching using some sort of database and medical AI expertise to be able to mix and match, splice and dice, programming cells with a language. I mean, we talked about that at the very end of the show again, back on the 14th, how they're able to digitally print life. This is Craig Venter and Elon Musk. They're talking about having biological printers and sending them to places like Mars and then being able to upload a little program and bloop, 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 with biological cells. They send on little cartridges to be able to print life. This is from June 15th, 2017 at a motherboard, motherboard.vice.com. Craig Venter's digital to biological converter is real. Right now, it prints proteins, but in the far future, it could print human babies on Mars. So, like I said, Battlestar Galactica. I mean, maybe it could print a digital biological duplicate. Craig Venter thinks that sending living organisms to other galaxies on spaceships is definitely science fiction. It is much more realistic, he thinks, to print them on site using digital representations of their genome. He calls this, quote, biological teleportation. Now, we started the story maybe 2 weeks ago. Essentially emailing medicine and organisms back and forth between Earth and other planets is just one of the far future implications of a device developed by Synthetic Genomics, a company founded by Venter, a superstar geneticist and biotechnologist. The tabletop device is called the digital to biological converter. I mean, if there was anything that was ever close to the Star Trek replicator. I'm going to have to say this is it. Or the DBC for short. Without a fancy box, it looks like a bunch of complicated mechanical crap laid out on a table. But the device accepts digital representations of DNA over the internet and then reconstructs them on the spot. Using the chemical building blocks of life, adenine, cytosine, guanine, and thiamine, but you might recognize their initials as CATG. But just like a printer, it needs a cassette, but instead of colors, like an inkjet printer, it is bottles of chemicals. And this would make me think of the same sorts of technology that they were using to print organs. Remember, they were using stem cells to print livers and kidneys. And it was like a little inkjet with little sprayer nozzles. It's packaging complex biology that each of our tiny cells do remarkably well at much, much smaller scales. Venner, who pioneered genome sequencing in humans, has been at the center of some of the biggest genetic breakthroughs of our time. He's been teasing the advent of digital biological conversion for years in interviews, and in his 2013 book called Life at the Speed of Light, along the way, synthetic genomics developed a precursor to the DBC called the BioXP, which can construct DNA, but not quite from scratch. After the BioXP was used quickly to synthesize an avian flu vaccine, ding, ding, ding. Remember, all this newfangled technology is going to be available at a Department of Homeland Security emergency vaccination spot near you, probably the high school in your neighborhood. You'll just have to drive up and painlessly in the arm, or here, nibble on this little banana. getting antimicrobials and vaccines to space is going to be important, and not at the slow pace of a rocket ship, says Venter. So now the DBC has become more of a futuristic curio, with a peer-reviewed paper published in June in Nature Biotechnology. The paper describes the system in detail and lays out some of its successes. It can print DNA, RNA, which is a key for decoding DNA instructions, viruses, and some kinds of vaccines, as well as bacteriophages to kill infections. It can also print the synthetic bacterium developed by Venter last year with just 437 genes in its simplest life ever, according to him. This paper and the attention of Venter hopes it will garner a start of a worldwide revolution in science if enough people buy into the idea, and the DBC itself, that is. Right now, it has some issues, namely synthesizing DNA with the device is an incredibly wasteful and expensive process, and it isn't entirely error-proof. But Venter is optimistic. If you had a digital biological converter hooked up to your desktop computer, we could email you insulin or a vaccine right in the comfort of your own home, and the device would produce it for you ready to go, says Venter. And if you think about all the protein-based drugs that are out there, if you can get those by email instead of going to the pharmacy, it's a concept that is going to be a very different world. I would say that they can get this crap off the ground. This is going to be really as close to the replicator as we have. I mean, it really is a similar technology to what Eric Strexler had talked about with molecular manufacturing. I mean, we're just talking about proteins, but let's go to the molecular level. Desktop manufacturing of product using things such as nanotechnology. And you'll be able to produce anything, whether it be biological or not. Just have a cartridge of a different raw material. And you can print, if you had a blueprint, you know, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And there's the recipe. Well, check this out. Why the you in an afterlife wouldn't really be you. Memories, points of view, and the self. July 1st, 2017. The Discovery is a 2017 Netflix film in which Robert Redford plays a scientist who proves that the afterlife is real. Once the body dies, some part of our consciousness leaves us and travels to a new plane, the scientist explains, evidenced by his machine that measures, as another character puts it, quote, brain wavelengths on a subatomic level, leaving the body after death, unquote. And I thought this was interesting because I had always thought that, you know, if you really start looking at some of the basics of physics and matter and energy, you start to realize that we are but stardust. And Carl Sagan had talked about that, how we are just a part of the cosmos and all of the basic elements that make up what's out there are a part of what we are made up of. And I've come to the conclusion that we are living in one giant living organism. You know, space, you know, it's not any different. It's just at a different time scale and a different measurement scale. It's very expansive and things are billions of years old. And things have evolved in a way that potentially we could have organisms, supernova, with big giant eyeballs looking at us, that have a billion year lifespan. And within those giant nebula are all these other little things that move around and interact at a subatomic level, changing light to energy and energy to light to matter and moving at ways that we can't even comprehend, being influenced by cosmic radiation to cause mutation, whatever. I mean, it's all the same processes that are happening. But when we start to look at how they are building quantum brains and quantum internets to send data with flashes of light and optogenetics and being able to, I had a story one time about being able to change, I don't know, as part of quantum, and they could have light change to actual matter, matter to light, I don't know, somewhere in there, E equals MC squared. But everything comes down to being like waves and vibrations and energy. If you get down to that basic level, I'm going to have to agree that maybe there are subatomic wavelengths that exist that we are a part of, that make up who we are, different frequencies. You know, maybe I vibrate as an organism at some weird number that makes me who I am. Makes my brain neurons fire and play a certain symphony that, you know, could be transferred as light waves or energy waves of some kind. You know, the fact that they can actually play back the music that's being generated by a planet, let's say, by Saturn or Jupiter. Remember when they sent those, maybe it was the Voyager mission that started doing all the close zooms-ins, zoom-ins, as they were leaving the solar system. And one of them sent back some pretty interesting music that was being played. If you remember studying classical literature and when they first started trying to discover astronomy and how our world ticks, they had described the quote-unquote harmony of the spheres. I truly believe that. I truly believe that everything operates in balance. And that's when you start to get back to some of the more ancient cultures on this planet. Go back to the ancient Chinese or the ancient Hindus or, you know, like the Tibetan monks and their Om and using sounds to take you into a trance state, to be able to reach higher levels of consciousness. I mean, I truly believe in, we looked at frequencies. We did extensive research into frequencies from all different types of points of view. And the brain, if I'm not mistaken, starts at around 10 hertz, maybe even lower, zero to 10 hertz, somewhere in there. And each different level of brain frequencies takes you to a different level of consciousness and the ability to think and draw conclusions and I don't know. It's just very interesting. But anyway, so let's get back here. So I'm pondering off on a tangent. So they are thinking now that maybe brain wavelengths on a subatomic level leave the body after death in this movie. But I tend to agree with that maybe that is a possibility. And it says this idea is not too far afield from a real theory called quantum consciousness, proffered by a wide range of people, from physicist Roger Penrose to physician Deepak Chopra. And I'm going to tell you, somehow UCY.TV's email got on a mailing list that is a whole bunch of news groups and smarty pants having these philosophical and medical deep discussions about consciousness and what happens to it after death. And the person who is running that news group that I somehow got on the mailing list of, that sends probably 10, 12 emails a week of smarty pants arguing, the owner of that news group happens to be Deepak Chopra. So I'm not quite sure how I got on that list, but it is kind of interesting. And there are some real scientists who are arguing this. Some versions hold that our mind is not strictly the product of our brain and that consciousness exists separately from material substance, so that the death of your physical body is not the end of your conscious existence. Because this is the topic of my next book, and that would be this author, Heavens on Earth, The Scientific Search for the Afterlife, Immortality, and Utopia by Henry Holt, 2018. The film, which is called The Discovery on Netflix, triggered a number of problems that I, the author, Henry Holt, have identified with all such concepts, both scientific and religious. First, there is the assumption that our identity is located in our memories, which are presumed to be permanently recorded in the brain. If they could be copied and pasted into a computer or duplicated and implanted into a resurrected body or soul, we would be restored. Well, that is not how memories work. Memory is not like a DVR that can play back the past on a screen in your mind. Memory is continually edited, and the fluid process that utterly depends on your neurons in your brain being functional. It is true that when you go to sleep and wake up the next morning, you go under anesthesia for surgery. You do come back hours later and your memories return. But as they do, even after a so-called profound hypothermia and circulatory arrest. But under this pressure, the patient's brain is cooled down to a low of 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which causes electrical activity in the neurons to stop, suggesting that long-term memories are stored statically. I was wondering about that little girl who drowned that we started reading about, how cold the water was. But that cannot happen if your brain dies. And that is why CPR has to be done as soon as a heart attack or a drowning. Because if the brain is starved of oxygen-rich blood, the neurons die along with the memories stored therein. Unless you are a little girl who got hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is pretty messed up. Secondly, there is the supposition that copying your brain's connectome, which is the diagram of neural connections, and that's something that Georgie Porgy Church is working on with barcoding neurons, and then uploading it into a computer, as some scientists such as Kurzweil suggest, resurrecting your physical self in an afterlife, as many religions envision, would result in you waking up as if from a long sleep, either in a lab or in quote-unquote heaven. But the copy of your memories, your mind, or even your soul is not you. It is a copy of you, no different than a twin. And no twin looks at his or her sibling and thinks, there I am. Neither duplication nor resurrection can insatiate you in another plane of existence. Third, your unique identity is more than just your intact memories. It is also your personal point of view. Neuroscientist Kenneth Hayward, a senior scientist at Howard Hughes Medical Institute and president of the Brain Preservation Foundation. Ding-a-ling. Hey, is that the institute that they referred to in What the hell is the name of that show? It was a cartoon. It was an adult cartoon. And they had all their, oh, Futurama. They had all the brains in jars in a room. So the president of the Brain Preservation Foundation, who knew we had one of those, divided this entity into the MEM self and the POV self. He believes that if a complete MEM self is transferred into a computer, or presumably, quote unquote, resurrected in heaven, the POV self, like point of view, will awaken. Well, I, the author, disagree. If this were done without the death of the person, there would be two memory selves, and each with its own point of view self looking out at the world through its unique eyes. At that moment, each would take a different path in life, thereby recording different memories based on different experiences. You would not suddenly have two point of views. If you died, there is no known mechanism by which your point of view self would be transported from your brain into a computer or a resurrected body. A point of view depends entirely on the continuity of self from the one moment to the next, even if that continuity is broken by sleep or anesthesia. Death is a permanent break in that continuity, and your personal point of view cannot be moved from your brain into some other medium here or in the hereafter. And that makes sense, because when you're thinking about it, even any stress that you have experienced in life has imprinted itself on your biome, in your epigenetics. We've read about stress causing DNA damage that could potentially be passed down to your offspring. We found out now that stress is a killer. Stress actually ages your brain more significantly than they ever imagined. And who hasn't sold their soul for a paycheck to live in a very stressful, unhealthy situation for years, being stressed out all the time and sitting on your ass in front of a computer? If you work from home, probably chain smoking, drinking coffee, and always being in that fight or flight mode. Only found out 20, 25 years later that smoking and sitting and stressing are probably going to be what kills you. Stressful experiences can age the brain, quote unquote, by years. Alzheimer's experts here. Child's death, divorce, or job loss linked to poor cognition in later life, study finds, with African Americans being more susceptible. Stressful life experiences can age the brain by several years, new research suggests. Experts led by a team from Wisconsin's University School of Medicine and Public Health in the U.S. found that even one major stressful event early in life may have an impact on later brain health. The team examined data for 1,320 people who reported stressful experiences over their lifetime and underwent tests in such areas such as thinking and memory. The subject's average age was 58, including 1,232 white Americans and 82 African Americans. A study of neural psychological tests examined several areas, including four memory scores, which would be immediate verbal memory and visual learning, as well as story recall. Stressful experiences, including things such as losing a job, the death of a child, divorce, or growing up with a parent who abused alcohol or drugs. The results showed that larger numbers of stressful events was linked to poorer cognitive functions later in life. When looking at African Americans, the team found that they experienced 60% more stressful events than white people during their lifetimes. Researchers said that in African Americans, each stressful experience was equivalent to approximately 4 years of cognitive aging. The study, which has not been published in a peer-reviewed journal yet, was presented at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in London. Dr. Maria Carrillo, a chief scientific officer for the Alzheimer's Association, said stressful events that the researchers were focusing on were large in variety: the death of a parent, abuse, loss of a job or a home, poverty, living disadvantagedly, a divorce. And she said that even the change of a school could be regarded as a stressful life event for some children. Dr. Doug Brown, the director of research at the Alzheimer's Society, said that we know that prolonged stress could have an impact on our health, so it is no surprise that this study indicates stressful life events may also affect our memory and our thinking abilities later in life. So, like, how are you ever going to avoid stress? Because you're not. But like I said, those of us who have sold our souls for a living, and that was the only way we knew how to live, was being stressed out all the time as a motivator to get it done. That proverbial kick in the ass, it makes it very difficult to not live that way anymore after all of the damage has been done. So anyway, you cannot transfer your events into your body, your point of view self, they are saying. And I think one of those reasons is because there are biological changes that have occurred because of these different influences that have affected your corporeal biological form that have caused you to operate at a certain frequency, let's say, to make you who you are. They can't replicate that unless they did some sort of, I don't know, full body scan with every frequency of every cell mapped. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe, just maybe in the future, but I highly doubt it. It says, if this sounds dispiriting, it is just the opposite. Awareness of our mortality is uplifting because it means that every moment, every day, and every relationship matters. Engaging deeply with the world and with our sentient beings brings meaning and purpose, like the show. And we, each of us, are unique in the world and in history, geographically and chronologically. Our genomes and connectomes cannot be duplicated, so we are individuals have vouchsafed with awareness of our mortality and self-awareness of what that means. So that's what makes me mad, that they are trying to reproduce us. I saw a story too. They were all excited. They use CRISPR to embed a GIF, and I think I mentioned this in the last show, inside of a bacteria. The first thought I had to myself is once they bloop, digitally, biologically convert us into a newly printed organism, will they put the little logo that they own, our synthetic genome, into our genome, like a little genetic barcode? Well, don't worry, because the fact that they can't, they say, duplicate you, that sounds dispiriting. It is just the opposite, because it means that we are important, and that means that we own our being. Our genomes and connectomes are vouchsafed, and our awareness of our mortality and self-awareness of what we mean. What does that mean, though? Life is not some temporary staging for the big show hereafter. It is our personal proscenium in the drama of the cosmos, of the here and now. And everything you do acts like a cue ball. And echoes, I don't know if throughout the universe, but maybe it does. Over the long term, every action has an equal and opposite reaction of some sort. I don't know, guys. Just saying. So, where do we go from here? Well, by 2020, every single thing in our world, every single product and service is going to be imbued with some sort of artificial intelligence, they say. So look out. You don't have to be a smarty pants anymore. It'll be letting you know what's going on. So let's get back there. I've started about 10 different stories today. So let's finish one, Joel. All right. So I don't know. Let's scroll up and down. I don't know. We got a little spinning tab. All right, AI offers exciting possibilities, they say. But unfortunately, most vendors are blowing smoke up everybody's ass and telling them it's coming. But it's not really going to be anything. It's going to be all about the data. One of the things that they keep telling you over and over again is if you feed it enough data, They'll be able to give you better predictions. Well, listen to this one. Battery-free video cam grabs pictures and power from the same light source. So this is an internal camera, and researchers are so excited because it'll be able to glean video 24/7 without ever stopping and pushing it to the cloud somewhere. And then the big robot googly your brain, the big AI, is going to be able to crunch that video. And the more video it crunches, the more it learns. They're going to be able to integrate these 24/7 cameras into your smartphones, smart devices. Google's AI scientists show that you can get better image recognition results by feeding machines a whole lot more data. Da-da-da-da-ling. Recent artificial intelligence experiment at Google, conducted in partnership with the lizard's pit, Carnegie Mellon University, showed that it is possible to get far better image recognition by simply feeding algorithms a lot more data. Google released a new paper last week outlining the principles behind the experiment. Machine learning algorithms learn to better perform a particular task by munching through enormous quantities of data. But so far, the amount of data the major AI experiences have conducted with has remained mostly unchanged. So let's now announce these 24/7 little never-ending, never-turning-off camera devices that can just keep sucking video. Oh, yes, the future of artificial intelligence and video surveillance. Let's stop spinning tabs. So maybe I can open something. Here it is. Miniature camera could be self-sustaining in smartphones and for surveillance. The video is simple enough. The man's facial expressions change. Remember, we talked about behavioral monitoring. The man's changes facial expressions before moving his head up and down, then side to side in a clip that looks a bit like a moving daguerreotype camera captured more than a century and a half ago. So it sounds like stop action photography. This is used to capture his headshot, and it is cutting edge using a new light power technology 24/7. All right, guys, it's you, 6 minutes.
Anti-media radio on ECY.tv.